Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to the podcast. For those of you that don't speak Italian, thank you so much for joining us for a new episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. We have a lot to talk about today. 2 days have passed since the Roma-Liverpool match, so we won't get into it too much, but at the end of the show, we're going to take a deep dive on Roma with our dear friend John Solano, because there's so many interesting topics with Roma, not just the match. We're going to talk, of course, about the great Scudetto race preview the weekend in Serie A with our friend Thousand Names and answer your Twitter questions. Before we get to all that, everyone's favorite segment is with our great friend, co-host, producer, Alex Goldberg. I want to talk to you about the main topics of the week. So let's start with the Liverpool Roma match. So let me ask you, Alex, let's look forward more than backwards. Do you think this comeback against Liverpool is much more daunting than what Roma did against Barcelona a few weeks ago?
I do, David, but technically, mathematically, it's not, just because they scored two away goals. So 4-1 versus 5-2, the two away goals really help. Now they can have two different results that will send them through, winning 3-0 or even winning 4-1. So technically, it's not more daunting, but I'm saying it is, and I'm pretty firm in saying that. Simply, first of all, lightning doesn't strike twice, or really, actually, my girlfriend has pointed out before that it has struck twice on the same person, but it's not going to strike twice here, in my opinion. And also, it's tougher for two reasons, for completely different reasons for each team. Liverpool, I think, will definitely learn from Barca. Barca collapsing, I think they definitely don't want to join that storyline. They have a great energy around them, and they really don't have to take this weekend that seriously in the Premier League. They can really go guns a-blazing next week and not do what Barcelona did and completely collapse and falter. But also, Roma is still having to fight for their spot in Serie A. And sure, they were a few weeks ago against Barcelona, and they had to take the weekend as seriously as they did midweek. But still, to a certain point, you can't keep being able to play dynamite on the weekend. And I'm not even saying they have, but you can't be able to, we're all humans. You can't give 110% of your focus on the weekend, 110% midweek, and just be able to keep it up forever and ever and ever. So, I think they play Chievo this weekend at home. That's definitely a 3 points that they should have. But still, I think that sooner or later is going to affect them in the Champions League, and I think it'll affect them next week. They just can't be as fresh as Liverpool will be. So that's really my two reasons why it won't happen. But then also just to talk, I mean, we all know how great Mohamed Salah is. He was incredible again on Tuesday. But David, there's just some energy right now with Liverpool. There's like it pains me to say, obviously, as a fan of Chelsea, and I don't root for any other Premier League teams to do well, but it's almost undeniable if you're watching any league. I think Liverpool has the best energy around them out of any top team in any of the top leagues. They really do. Barca's Barca, right? Messi's ridiculous. Yeah. But still, they don't have this. They're always good. But there was nothing this season that made me think, oh, now Barca's even better. And sure, Bayern has been really good ever since their manager switched. But look, they faltered once again to Real, and they're not that much different than they are year in, year out. Real's great in the Champions League, but they're not great in league. Liverpool has done great in the Premier League. You can't beat City with the season they had in the Premier League. But consistently, when Liverpool plays well, it seems to make the rounds. The fans seem to be fully enthralled with the players and vice versa. Jurgen Klopp could not be a better manager for that team. The players seem to love him. I think there's an energy that Liverpool has that Barca did not have. And sure, if Roma does start to creep up in the second leg, they're up one, maybe they're up two, I think Liverpool will be able to come together a lot better than Barcelona did. And by the way, Salah is not Messi, but he's Messi right now. So there's no underestimating momentum and what a player can do when they're in form. So I just think the force and the energy of Liverpool will be too much for Roma. So those are my thoughts. What about you, David?
Yeah, I echo a lot of what you said. I mean, look, what really stands, I'm not a no PL expert. I've watched the Liverpool a little bit because I love Salah, but what a terrifying attack. Like, I find that much more terrifying than Barcelona, even with Messi up front, just absolutely terrifying. What really stands out to me is the speed kills and the incredible ability of Liverpool on the counterattack. So I look at Roma going into this match. They need three goals. But, you know, kind of trying to get goals early and opening up to a potential counterattack sounds as terrible a plan as like a degenerate gambler who gets this information on the new Cirque du Soleil in Las Vegas and is like, geez, you know, I really want to go see the show. I'm going to go to Vegas, but I'm definitely not going to gamble. And then, you know, by the time he leaves, the deed for the house is gone. The college fund is gone. So I think Roma's in a really tough pickle on how to approach this match just because of Liverpool speed. You mentioned, you know, lightning doesn't strike twice. We almost saw Juve the day after Roma. So the odds, to me, that's even more unlikely. So I'm hoping Roma proves me wrong. But, you know, I see it as rather difficult. Since we're on the topic, I want to briefly address, you know, obviously a terrible issue what happened with the Roma fans before the match. So I have a brief thoughts on this. It's like, look, you know, I'm pretty familiar with the ultra culture. We had on Monday as a guest, Maurizio from around Jay, you know, I think we can't paint all ultras with the same brush. I think Maurizio would consider himself ultra. I have a lot of friends from Padova that consider themselves ultra, and they're very passionate about representing the city. But there's certainly an aspect of the ultra culture and some people who really aren't in it for the football. It's really just an excuse to kind of be in a gang and violence, and it's really a terrible situation. The first thought I had when I heard the news is, you know, I'm old. One of my first football memories, unfortunately, is the Heysel match between Juve and Liverpool. And, you know, what really stands out to me is Serie A here can really learn from England. That is what happened at Heysel was so terrible that they banned, you know, English clubs from European competitions for a while. And I got to give credit to the English Federation. They really addressed the problem in a drastic manner. I'm not sure if this situation is kind of the same and it'll warrant the same reaction, but I think Serie A really needs to look at what England did in the 80s if they want to get serious about the situation. So I wanted to get that out there. I don't want people to think that I am ducking that situation because it needs to be addressed. But switching gears, let's talk about the other big topic is the Scudetto race. Of course, on Monday, we covered a lot of that match between Juve and Napoli. So I'm going to give the remaining schedule for you, Alex, and also our listeners, and then you and I can chat on how we think this is going to end. Juve actually has a rather difficult schedule the rest of the season. On Saturday, they're traveling to San Siro to face Inter. Huge game, huge implications for Inter, not just Juve. Then they're at home against Bologna, a team that probably doesn't have nothing really to play for. They avoided relegation. Then they traveled to Roma, team that is deep in the race for a Champions League spot, and then they finish at home with Verona, a team that's essentially already relegated. So two gimme matches for Juve at home, but two really tough away matches. Napoli, on the other hand, they travel to Tuscany, they face Fiorentina over the weekend, then they play at home against Torino, then they travel to Genoa to play against Sampdoria and are home at Crotone. So on paper, schedule-wise, Napoli certainly has it more interestingly. So Alex, you and I have talked about the Scudetto race multiple times. And correct me if I'm wrong, I know I've been steadfast on Juve winning it. I think you've been kind of on the same page. But now that it's this close and I went over the schedule, where do you stand on this?
All right, I guess I'm stubborn, David, because I'm sticking to Juve as well. Sure, I'm very nervous about that prediction. But yeah, you mentioned the fact that Juve's got two gimmies and then they got two really tough away matches. But I only see them dropping points this weekend, and that's versus Inter. You mentioned that Inter obviously has a lot to play for. I can't underestimate that. So I think that is going to turn into a draw. But I also think Napoli is going to draw Fiorentina this weekend. Fiorentina, obviously, no slouch. They've hit a little bit of a skid, but overall, we're playing good football. They still have an outside chance at the Europa League. So I think both Juve-Napoli draw this weekend. So they stay 1 point ahead for Juve, 1 point behind for Napoli. And then I really think that Juve takes care of Bologna, and then sure, at Roma is a tough game, but if I want to be consistent with how I think it's going to go for Roma next week in the Champions League, I think they falter, they fall short to Liverpool, And honestly, I cannot underestimate what it does to a team when they bottom out or they crash out. Sure, a while back, they didn't think, as we said, they were playing with house money and they didn't have their hopes up in the Champions League. But they're human. They're going to have their hopes up next week thinking, oh, we can do this again. We're going home. We can do this. And I think once it doesn't happen, they're going to be a little deflated. They're still going to be very motivated to obviously qualify for Champions League. But I see Juve taking all 3 points at Roma when they do play them. I see Juve beating Hellas Verona. And so I just think Napoli will slip up once more. And even if they don't, I'm staying consistent. And then Juve just wins by 1 point. But I really do think Napoli might get a little excited, think, oh, we got Torino, we got Sampdoria, Crotone. and I think they slip up. Maybe it's just a draw, but I think they slip up at least once against Torino, Sampdoria, Crotone. I think it stays really, really close. Honestly, if I'm a betting man, I just say Juve holds that 1 point lead and it goes right up until the last day, stays very interesting. But I guess the theme of my take is I'm down on Roma all of a sudden. So that's where I'm at. How about you, David?
Well, good analysis there. I'm really stumped at this point because, look, I said it all season. I'd really like to see Napoli win because that would be such a great way to nullify the perception that Serie A is boring and defensive to have a team that plays like that and Juve reign. But at this point, Juve season, and we saw all the fans meeting with the players, like they have a lot of pressure to hold off. And I'm going to say, you know, until you beat the champ, I'm still going to pick the champ. But right now, the champ is like going into the boxing round, might be behind on a card and has to finish strong. So I think Juve, a lot of pressure on them, but they're really battle tested for it. I know a lot of people made fun of Napoli celebrating, and man, what a celebration that was with 20,000 people waiting for the players. I know some people made fun of that, but you know, again, I've said it numerous times on this podcast, you can't apply the standards of a club like Juve or even Milan in their heyday to Napoli. I compare it when I was in college with my roommate. We played FIFA all the time. I was really good at FIFA back then, not now. And he would never beat me ever, 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 except for one night. I had maybe a little bit too much to drink. I had a crappy team. He had Germany. I lost 1-0, and the guy went absolutely apeshit. And I compare it as kind of the same with Napoli. They finally win this match. They are a provincial team. Everyone makes fun of them. Don't be provincial. They are. They own it, and they're fine with it. But I'm curious if, you know, all that celebration might not keep the team totally focused. So really interesting. I'm going to give you a very slight edge. But this match against Inter, as you mentioned, they might drop some points, is going to be really, really interesting. And I think that's going to go a long way towards deciding the season. But don't sleep on this Fiorentina match against Napoli. Pretty interesting there as well.
All right, well, you've alluded to it. Obviously, Juve plays Inter this weekend. Napoli plays Fiorentina. So we got to get to game picks. And I have to mention, I got to give Thousand Names credit. I don't know how to phrase it, but he's on a 6-game winning streak. So I don't know if his momentum is going to continue this weekend. But, David, what do we have for game picks from you and Thousand Names?
Well, I think Juve fans have a pretty good idea of what he picked for Inter-Juve. I keep trying to get Thousand Names actually on the podcast with us. I think he's going to come on Monday, but I think a lot of it is going to have to go with how his picks go. Again, he's on a 6-game win streak, so if you bet on these games, pay attention to what he says, but I will remind you, he has been on a great streak before, and then it totally fell apart. So without further ado, we're going to go over the 3 games that he sent me in. Of course, he started with Inter Juve. No surprise to people that have been following. He picked Inter to win 1-0 with a goal by Icardi. The comment is that Spalletti is going to get Sarri his first Scudetto, and that the whole city of Naples is going to go up in flames, and that Buffon is going to be like Balak in 2002. He's going to lose every match and end his retirement without winning anything. So Thousand Names doubling down on this. I'll read it in Italian. Inter Juve 1-0. Icardi, Spalletti regala Sarri il primo scudetto. Napoli prende fuoco. Buffon come Ballack nel 2002 le perde tutte senza nemmeno arrivare in finale.
And we think we're stubborn holding on to Juve.
Yeah, he's going down in flames. But hey, you got to give him credit. He called both the Crotone match and the Napoli one. I think the Crotone one was even more shocking. I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to be bold. I actually think Juve is going to win. I think Juve is going to be really, really angry. I kind of compare this a little bit to like with the Real Madrid. Now they're really, their back's against the wall. Against Real Madrid, maybe they had nothing to lose, but here they have to go and put in a good performance. I'm going to have 1-0 with a goal by Higuain. Next match, some Champions League race implications, Torino-Lazio. His pick is 1-1, goals by Immobile and Belotti. He says, the match between the two strikers that weren't able to bring Italy to the World Cup ends in a draw. Inzaghi is going to receive a painful lesson from Mazzarri, and it can kiss goodbye the Champions League. That's another team he picks on a lot, is Lazio in Italian, Torino-Lazio 1-1, Immobile Belotti, termina pari la sfida tra attaccanti italiani che non sono riusciti a portare la nazionale al Mondiale. Inzaghi riceve una dolorosa lezione da Mazzarri, addio Champions. This is a tough one. Lazio's been playing well. Torino's been really up and down. I'm going to go with Lazio winning 1-0. Milinkovic-Savic has struggled for a bit, but he's been great, and I'm going to give him the game winner on a key match for Lazio. Last pick, not surprisingly, picked the Napoli match. I think Juve fans can guess what he picked. Fiorentina-Napoli 0-2. Goals by Insigne and Mertens. He says that Pioli is going to mail this in and give a gift to Napoli and give them the Scudetto. He's going to say both Fiorentina fans and Napoli fans are going to celebrate together. Napoli surpassing Juve. People that don't know Fiorentina fans hate Juve. And that he says, though, President De Laurentiis, Napoli is going to be ready to double down and also buy Federico Chiesa from Fiorentina in the process. Man, Fausen was on fire this week. In Italian, Fiorentina-Napoli 0-2, Insigne-Mertens, Pioli si scansa, regala lo scudetto al Napoli, tifosi viola-azzurri uniti nel festeggiare il sorpasso alla Juve, Aurelio pronto a prendere Federico Chiesa come risarcimento. Now, this is a tough one, because Napoli, you know, that big win against Juve, a lot of pressure on them. Since I still think Juve is going to win the Scudetto, I mean, I guess they could win it just by running their own table. I'm going to give Napoli a win here and maybe say they could struggle in another match. I'm going to go 1-0 Napoli with a goal by Insigne. So some great picks by our friend Thousand Names. Let's see if he can keep his streak going. A couple of other games I want to bring to your attention. Some for the Champions League implication, Roma at home against Chievo, which we mentioned. Unfortunately, Milan doesn't have much to play for, but for our Milanisti listening, I'm going to remind you they traveled to Bologna to face Donadoni, former Milan legend, and an important match in the race for the Europa League. Atalanta plays at home against Genoa. So really exciting matches in Serie A with a lot of implications. And something that's always exciting are the Twitter questions that we get from you guys. As always, you can send us questions using the CalcioLand hashtag. We got a lot of movie questions. I saved a couple for Monday. But let's start with the football ones. So, Alex, which ones are we going to go over today?
All right, let's start off with a player that has struggled a bit. Let's go to AC Milan. David, what does the future hold for Suso?
It's a great question because, look, you know, I think a lot of players have improved with Gattuso. I don't think we can say that for Suso. I think he's only had one goal. Someone that I follow, very good in Italy, you know, I've had this good observation that, look, Suso's really good, but he's the type of player that you kind of have to build your team around. You know, I'm not sure maybe he's quite that good to be the key guy, but when you look at Milan's squad, he's definitely one of the best players. Now, he does have an exit clause for around 40 million euros, so Milan's got to, you know, see what happens. I guess if Suso wanted to leave and could get a team willing to pay that, I think in this market he could definitely fetch that. It's an interesting situation, and Milan doesn't have full control over this. I will say if Suso were to leave and Milan can reinvest that money well, maybe that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world based on what we saw from Suso under Gattuso.
All right, staying on Milan, and this is an interesting question. David, are Milan better off not qualifying for the Europa League next season?
So, you know, when you look at Lazio and Inter, so, you know, Lazio was in the Europa League. They went pretty far. Inter wasn't in it. I look at the squads. I think they're fairly comparable. Can we really say that not being in the Champions in the Europa League really benefited Lazio? Not sure. Now, you know, this is also a World Cup year. I'm sorry, I'm not completely familiar with the scheduling and the implications. But, you know, if Milan had to go through the preliminary rounds on top of having some players in the World Cup, it might be a lot. Like, look, bottom line, Milan has to get back to the Champions League in whichever way possible. I think, too, you know, if being in the Europa League is good or not will also depend on what their transfer market looks like, you know, how much depth they'd have. So it's a hard question. I'd like to say that they're probably better off not being in it. So I'm going to stick with that. While we're on the topic of Milan, a little bit before we were recording this, I saw Berlusconi was at a political rally and implied that it's possible he could buy back Milan. If you guys listened to our special that we did on Milan last December, we said that could be a possibility. So a lot of drama surrounding Milan, that's for sure. So let's see what happens with that. So we'll keep monitoring that situation with Berlusconi. If there's more developments, we'll talk about that on Monday.
All right, next Twitter question. Who are the best managers in Serie A?
So the person originally asked me to list 10. That's a little bit a little bit much. But obviously, of course, we know the top ones, very different. Allegri and Sarri couldn't be more different in style. We'd have to rate them as some of the best. Of course, Spalletti at Inter. I think he's done a good job there after doing well at Roma. Simone Inzaghi, definitely a rising star. Very intriguing manager with the way his teams play. I think too, he, you know, he maybe complains a little bit too much, but still young in the role, one really to watch. On the managers, maybe not on the huge teams, Gasperini at Atalanta, I think is terrific, especially if you have, young players. I think Gianpaolo at Sampdoria had a lot of hype for a little while. Maybe that hype is toning down a little bit, but I'll give you one name that I've mentioned before in recent weeks, and that's Benevento manager De Zerbi. Really one to watch. I'm looking at, you know, so many people defending Oddo at Udinese for the job he's doing there. I think, you know, had he not been a really good player not that long ago on top teams, maybe people wouldn't give him as long a leash. I'd much rather have De Zerbi than Oddo based on what I've seen. So those are the ones that really stand out to me. Of course, Di Francesco is making a big name for himself at Roma. I'd like to see Di Francesco stay there a few more years and grow there and see what he can do. Definitely showing some potential. And another one that we want to give a shout out to is Pioli at Fiorentina, who's managed a lot of things this season, all the players they sold in the summer, and then, of course, Astori's tragic situation. So, of course, Serie A always has a lot of good managers, an interesting crop this season for sure.
Yeah, a lot of characters. You could definitely say there's a lot of different managers there. Next question, David. What is Paulo Dybala's best position?
It's a good question. Now, originally, and some people seem to forget that, like when Dybala exploded at Palermo, he was a pure central striker with Vasquez playing behind him. I thought at first at Juve, he did quite well playing as the central striker. A lot of people, you know, look at his body type and the way he plays, that maybe he'd be a great trequartista behind two strikers, but that doesn't seem to really be his best position. I think the further up Dybala is, at least in this stage of his career, the better. It'll be interesting to see if he adapts his role, because you'd think with his creativity and his body type, like he could be more of a second striker, trequartista eventually. But you look at his goal tally, I mean, the guy scores a lot of goals. I think Higuain's fantastic at Juve. I don't think Juve should consider moving away from Higuain. But maybe in some matches that Higuain takes a breather, it would be nice to see Dybala again as the central striker.
Yeah, I think he's obviously not a pure striker. He does belong farther forward. He definitely belongs with a striker that's unselfish, that is willing to lay it off to Dybala, because obviously Dybala's best attribute is goal scoring, that's for sure. So, David, next Twitter question, and I have to chuckle. Would Antonio Conte be a good fit at Arsenal?
So I'm going to turn it over to you shortly because, I know we're going to want for you to rant, and you're more familiar with the Premier League than I am. But I'm just going to tell you this. You know, what's really interesting to me with Conte is that, like, a lot of the jobs that we thought could kind of make sense for him are dwindling down. So I'm kind of stumped on what could happen next. I had predicted he'd be at PSG. There was some news on that. It looks like Tuchel is going to take that job over him. The Italian national team job, it looks like at first Mancini was going to get it. Now there's some momentum for Ancelotti. Doesn't really seem to be in the running for it. This time last year, we were talking about him potentially going to Inter. I think Spalletti's nailed down that job. Milan gave Gattuso an extension. And look, even if he doesn't finish the season strong, I'm sure if Conte would want to go there without knowing that he can invest a lot in the transfer market, which, you know, barring a miracle, won't be the case for Milan. So I'm kind of stumped. So this Arsenal thing, I have no news on it, but looking at the landscape, he's kind of running out of places to go. So I have a feeling, Alex, you wouldn't be thrilled if he stays at Chelsea. So I have a feeling you might be happy with this scenario. So give me your take on how that would look.
All I can do is laugh. I definitely obviously have soured on Conte this year. I still appreciate what he did last year. But if you're a Premier League fan of any team except Arsenal, you love watching Arsenal lose. You just do. It's fun. They're that team that you kind of chuckle when they lose. So I would love if Antonio Conte went there and they didn't do that well. And David, I don't think they would do that well. Once again, I think he's a good manager. I think, as you said, he definitely can rebuild a team. He knows football. He's got a great IQ. They are not the team for Antonio Conte. Their striker, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, clearly is someone Antonio Conte doesn't like a lot. Aubameyang was looking to move somewhere in January, and everything I was hearing, whether there were rumors or just people giving their opinions, is Aubameyang's not Conte's type of striker. And I think they're right. I don't think he is Conte's type of striker. He likes more of a real number nine. And they also have Alexander Lacazette, not really Conte's type of striker. Also, Mesut Ozil is one of their best players. He's a little bit of a free roamer. It's kind of hard to find a position for Ozil except as a creator, as a playmaker. Well, part of Conte's weakness this year with Chelsea is he hasn't really given any player, except for when Hazard's in great form, that free roaming position. He's been more structured. He's been more stubborn with his formation. I don't think it would work. And the number one thing that I would caution Arsenal fans on if they want Conte to be manager, well, I've heard them applaud Arsene Wenger this year about actually playing some youth, okay? They have a lot of good youngsters, pretty good youngsters that have made their debuts, whether it's the Premier League or the Europa League. Conte is not going to play them. He's not going to play them. I know he's played young players before. He played Paul Pogba. He doesn't really like the youth. At least recently, he does not like the youth. He will not play your youth. And more importantly, he's not going to let your youth do much. He's going to have your youth probably not play at the youth games and then have them train with the senior squad and then not use them at all either. He's literally going to let your best youth players not play for the youth team or for the senior team. So not only is he not a good fit for the senior players on your team, he's not a good fit for the youth players on your team. But hey, you might concede a few less goals. I understand he has not always been a defensive-minded coach, but in the Premier League, that is clearly what he cares about. So Arsenal fans, if you want him, fine, have him. I'll be on the other side laughing. So that's my opinion. There we go.
All right,
let's move away from football. So I'm not as animated here. David, let's actually move to one of your favorite people. What is your take on Mike Francesa returning to WFAN in New York?
So we mentioned the potential of Berlusconi returning to Milan, Francesa returning to FAN, finally some universe and finally some order in a universe that's gone absolutely insane. Look, I'm so not surprised that this would happen. I actually thought that last year, last December, when there were some issues at WFAN with another host having to leave because of a big scandal, that this would be the way that Francesa could finagle not retiring and leaving the station and staying. I just don't see any other format that really works for him. I love The Fan, my favorite sports radio station. I grew up, I still listen to it, although without Francesa, it's been difficult to do, but it's absolutely fantastic that he's going back to WFAN. It's insane how much time I've spent thinking about this. I can't tell you how many people I've contacted out of the blue that I haven't spoken to in a long time that I know are fans to discuss how excited I am about it. I think he starts next week. And my goal is if Francesa does a segment on the World Cup, he hates soccer, that I'm going to be the guest on it. So I'm going to be working hard to make that happen. So I'm absolutely thrilled that he's back.
Love it. The king of sports radio. He truly, truly is. All right, David, last Twitter question. We've clearly moved away from football. So which movie do you like better, original Godfather or Godfather 2? And do you prefer Al Pacino's performance in Scarface or as Michael Corleone?
Well, you guys know that I love these questions. And this one's pretty straightforward, but the one on the Godfather, but it's one of my favorite questions. So look, I put a lot of thought into it. This came in a few days ago, and I was like, let me really think about it. Because look, I think a lot of people pick Godfather 2. It's a more epic movie. There's a lot of different scenes in different places. We have Michael going to Italy. We have the parts in Las Vegas. We have the parts in Cuba. We have De Niro basically doing a Marlon Brando imitation. That was really De Niro's coming out party as a legendary actor. De Niro's scenes, you know, in New York coming up as a, just really amazing scenes, as good acting as it gets. But I do think that the Godfather one is slightly superior just because, A, it's the original. It's such a perfect movie. Like, obviously, the music, the scenery, and the style then goes to Godfather 2. It's a much more singular movie. It really just takes place in New York. Brando, of course, is fantastic in it. You know, you don't have De Niro, but you have James Caan, who is incredible in that. So I'm going to give it a very slight edge. You know, I wouldn't argue with anyone that picks Godfather 2. I'm not saying it's gimmicky because it has so many different scenes in different areas and different locations. But to me, Godfather 1 is just perfect. It's the type of movie that I remember exactly where I was when I watched it the first time and just absorbing it. And it just blew me away. It really showed me what a movie could be. As far as Pacino and Scarface or playing Michael Corleone and Godfather, I got to be honest, I like Scarface. I don't think it's a movie that's aged particularly well. It makes sense to me that they would look to remake it. Pacino is obviously over the top. I mean, he's supposedly playing a coked out guy half of the movie, so it makes sense that he'd be a little bit over the top. But I think his performance as Michael is just perfect, just such a wide range on that. So I prefer Michael Corleone, but, you know, I know, I guess why a lot of people really love Scarface. But I'll tell you this, if you haven't watched Scarface in a long time and you rewatch it, I'm not sure it has aged, definitely not as well as Godfather. So, of course, keep these questions coming. Really appreciate it. I also want to take a moment. We've been asking a lot of you guys to leave reviews, and I want to give a shout out to our dear friend James McGee from the Sempre Napoli podcast. I know he was in touch with you, Alex, to let us know that we only really see the reviews that you guys leave for the U.S. Plenty of you have left them in other countries, so we really want to thank you for that. I really want to take a moment to thank you for all your support. I really encourage you to please keep supporting the podcast. Alex and I are really on the verge of taking it to the next level. So we rely on you being our marketing department. Tell a friend, if you know someone that loves a calcio, you know, tell them about the podcast, retweet us. A great way to show support is leaving those reviews. So as always, we appreciate your support. And now without further ado, we're going to take a deep dive on Roma with our dear friend, John Solano. A lot of really interesting information here. So thanks for listening. So who else could we have on tonight but our dear friend John Solano, the most frequent guest on Calcioland. By now you guys know his bio as well as I do. He runs the great IS Roma Press website. You can read his articles on Euro Fantasy Game. He's appeared on Roma's official site as well. He is our go-to person for Roma, definitely one of the most interesting clubs in all of Serie A this season. So John, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Absolutely. Glad to be back.
Awesome. So, you know, a couple of days passed since the game, so I don't want to dwell on it too much tonight. I want to kind of take a deeper dive on Roma and looking at the things surrounding the game. But I'm just going to ask you very simply, especially 2 days after the fact, what were your main takeaways from what we saw in the first leg against Liverpool?
Oh, well, there are definitely quite a few that you could take. But for me, undoubtedly, my biggest takeaway is definitely in regards to manager Eusebio DiFrancesco. For me, I think he got his entire game plan entirely wrong the other day. I thought he was incredibly naive in the way he set his team up. I thought their approach was really, really poor. So undoubtedly, that's my biggest takeaway. I was really disappointed in the setup that he had the Roma in. I can understand from his standpoint, hey, this system worked against Barcelona. We did fantastic against them. You know, why not roll it out against Liverpool? But in just terms of attack, I don't think you'll find two different sides between Liverpool and Barcelona in the way they play. So I was really disappointed in his failure to adapt. I just thought the approach was horrible. The first 20 minutes was actually really, really good. It was encouraging. But once Klopp and Liverpool figured that out, for the remaining, 25 minutes of the opening half and then a half hour into the second half, they just dominated Roma. And DiFrancesco really had no answer. And I was really, really shocked by that. I definitely thought at halftime, I thought he absolutely has to go to four at the back. But he didn't. And I was shocked by that because in the opening half, for me, Roma could have conceded three, maybe four goals. Had it not been for a couple of good saves by Alisson, the scoreline could have been infinitely worse than what it was in that opening half. And I was just incredibly dumbfounded at his lack of adapting and in that second half because I thought it was a no-brainer. Now, he did it later in the match, but by that time, it was 4-0 or 5-0, which, ultimately put the match entirely, beyond their reach and maybe even the tie. So for me, that was the most disappointing thing for me, without question. And I'm still shocked by it 2 days later, frankly.
A lot has been made, and you and I, have been involved with some of these debates on Roma's defense pace. Look, Liverpool's attack's incredibly fast, but, to then say Roma's defense is slow, that's not what happened in the game. I know we could get lost in a huge tangent with that, but I just wanted people to know that I'm in the same corner as you on that one. So you kind of hinted at, what happened against Barcelona and this match. Looking at the game, the scoreline could have been a lot worse. So for me, this is very different than against Barcelona. I thought in the first leg, 4-1 wasn't an accurate result of the match because I thought it was much closer for Roma. But at the end of the day, they leave Anfield in basically the same situation. 3 goals at home, they can get passed around. But from where I'm sitting, it looks a little bit different than that situation. So I want to get your take on what you think the odds are they can make another comeback and how this match, maybe it's not different for you, but if you think it's different, how different is it?
Oh, I think it's completely different. The great Gab Marcotti, he made a brilliant point, and he tweeted out that after that first leg against Barcelona, Roma played relatively well, that they at least had some momentum or at least some confidence heading into that second leg. I couldn't think of a more opposite situation. Roma played terrible. I can't imagine that they have confidence going into the second leg because, frankly, again, I think that 5-2 was entirely flattering for Roma. I thought it could have been much worse. I mean, to only lose by three, I thought was a borderline miracle, frankly. I see this situation almost entirely different. I know many will just, by the scoreline, hey, they can do it again. They can win 3-0. But after that first leg, I just have a very difficult time thinking that the Liverpool are not going to be able to score at least one goal at the Olympico. If Roma concede only one goal at the Olympico, in my opinion, it's almost tie over. And given the way they played in that first leg, I just don't see a scenario in which they keep a clean sheet. I mean, my thing against Barcelona was, you know, if they end the first half 1-0, get an early goal in the second half, and, you know, maybe they have a shot at it. I just don't see how that applies to Liverpool, just because their attack is just so dynamic. And the Roma's approach is just all over the place. I don't know how you fix all of that, right? Not fix that, but for Di Francesco, I don't know what you can do to turn the entire thing on its head, because that's what the Roma has to do. I mean, they played horrendously. So I really see the moment for Roma right now very, very bleak in terms of having the opportunity to advance.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So let's talk, unfortunately, about not a fun subject. I have to say, you know, I love covering football. My least favorite things are, unfortunately, the fan violence and, you know, legal matters and whatnot. So I'm going to frame it in this way. Of course, we all know of the terrible events that happened before the match. But one angle that I think is interesting here, and not to make a light of what happened, is Roma's president, James Pallotta, of course, is based in Boston, where Alex and I are recording. And, you know, he comes from a very different sporting culture. Like, some of the things you see in Italian stadiums are completely unthinkable here in the U.S. And Pallotta has had a rather contentious relationship with the Roma Ultra groups. So maybe tell our listeners a little bit about that if they're not familiar with it. And what do you think the fallout from what happened is going to take place, especially because, you know, there's an American owner at Roma, maybe someone that isn't so embedded with the ultra culture, like maybe a president who's based in Italy.
Yeah. So Pallotta has, as you mentioned, as you alluded to, he has not had the best relationship with the Roma supporters, particularly with the Ultra. So a lot of that has to do with him speaking out against sort of this violent culture. A lot of it also has to do with, I'm not sure how many will remember, if any actually know, the Roma's Cuva Sud was actually closed, what are we looking at, roughly 2 years ago.
Correct, yeah.
And a lot of the supporters believe that Pallotta did not do enough to support the fans. They believe that he didn't use his power to have the Olympic Committee just remove the barriers that were in the stadium, because that was the biggest complaint. Now the Olympic Committee, they put these barriers up, saying, you know, they wanted to reduce fan violence, and a lot of the supporters who sit in the Cuva Sud, most notably the ultras, they were very, very angry with Pallotta with his lack of action. Pallotta is, again, as you mentioned, he's been very outspoken about the fan violence in Italy. I mean, David, you and I are very familiar with it. I think we could both agree that it has to change.
Absolutely, yeah.
It should not be this way. You know, people should not go to a football match and fear that they may not make it home to their family. The entire notion that adults behave this way before a sporting match, it's a sport.
And to some of these people, I mean, the football is secondary. They're not even necessarily going for the game.
Right.
I mean, I've known people that are ultras that are not even necessarily fans of the game. Like, it's just kind of an excuse to do something else. And maybe that's something some listeners that aren't familiar with the culture know. So I totally agree with you there.
Right. And I wouldn't even classify a lot of these people who do this as fans. I mean, they're not fans, they're not supporters. They're looking to cause mischief. As you just mentioned, they're not there for the football. So what I see stemming from this is I really think Pallotta, I think he's going to be very careful in his approach, because he's seen how his words have been interpreted by the Roma supporters, especially the ultras. So I think he's going to take a very conservative approach, but I think he's going to try, and people are going to hate it. I mean, he gets a lot of stick, and I think a lot of it is really, really unfair. You know, people look at him as, and he mentioned this like a week or two ago, they see him as the quote-unquote the dumb American trying to come in and change things.
Absolutely.
But things like this, I mean, I don't care if you're from America. It doesn't matter where you're from. People should want to change this. Everybody should be on board with reducing this fan violence. To me, this is just such a black and white issue. There's no gray for it. I mean, this shouldn't happen. End of story.
Absolutely.
And any Roma supporters who get annoyed by the club trying to implement more safety measures, it'll just be absurd. And, you know, we've seen a lot of Roma supporters, they've boycotted matches when Palotta, the club, or even the Olympic Committee try to implement more safety measures, which, you know, a lot of them at times are a bit over the top, and to be honest, they don't even do anything. But something has to change. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the solution is. But Palotta trying to make a positive change, reducing this fan violence, is a 100% no-brainer. And if you're willing to argue having safer football matches, I wouldn't even consider you a fan, because, again, this should never happen in any way, shape, or form.
Completely agree with you there. Now let's talk about something more positive. Now, obviously, this great run in the Champions League has some very good financial ramifications for Roma, a club that, you know, has been hamstrung by financial fair play regulations. So give us a quick sense of what you think the impact of all the revenue Roma's making in the Champions League. And let's stay on the conservative side. So let's go on the assumption that they're not going to make a second great comeback. How much of an impact do you think all the revenue coming from the Champions League this season is going to have on Roma?
I think it's going to have an enormous impact. Once they play the second leg at the Olimpico against Liverpool, Roma will have garnered roughly around 100 million euros from this Champions League campaign, which is by far and away a club record, and it's absolutely fantastic. Now, a lot of this also is contingent upon them making the Champions League next season as well. So it's great that they garnered all this money from the Champions League run from this season. However, if they don't make the Champions League next year, that is a huge blow. But let's just go on the assumption that they do. I mean, we've seen what they've done the past 3, 4, 5 summers, where they sell a huge name all in the name of making a really huge profit. Now, should they, again, we'll assume they don't advance past Liverpool, you know, they get knocked out in this round. I mean, 100 million euros, that's huge for them. And in turn, they would not be forced to sell a big name in the summer, which would be, in my opinion, absolutely significant, because, I mean, the last 3 or 4 summers, I mean, this team has just been purged by losing 1 or 2 big names, and they've replaced them relatively well. But at some point, you have to have continuity within the team. So if they were able to avoid selling a huge name, I'm thinking Alisson, perhaps. I think that would be sensational. Now, I do think they would still make sales, but smaller ones, though. The name Lukasz Skorupski comes to mind. I think they would sell him anywhere from 10 to 15 million euros, but nearly all of that would be profit because they paid hardly anything for him. So yeah. I could still see them making smaller sales. I wouldn't be shocked if someone like Perotti, El Shaarawy left. But as long as the likes of Nainggolan, Manolas, Fazio, Alisson, as long as they remain, you know, the crucial players, I think that would just be so important. And frankly, it would be the first time in a number of years where the Roma haven't been forced to do that. And again, for a club of their size, and given that they haven't had a huge amount of success over recent years, having that continuity, I just think it's priceless. I think they absolutely 100% need it.
Very, very interesting. So I'll just ask you this right now. You kind of hinted at it, how important it is for Roma to finish in the top four. You know, it's a very tight race with Lazio and Inter. How confident are you on a scale of 1 to 10 that Roma is going to be one of those two teams?
Right now I would say a 6 or a 7. When you look at the schedules of Roma relative to Lazio and Inter, they by far and away have the easiest of the three, which is very positive. Now, the only thing that worries me is they have the big match against Juve at the Olimpico. Yep. I was really disappointed because I was hoping last week that Juve would win or at least draw against Napoli, because perhaps at that point...
Wow, you're really in a tough spot with that one.
Oh,
huh?
right? Oh, I know. I can't believe I just admitted that.
Understand why, but I can see how that must have not been easy for you.
Because had they won...
I would have been over.
The Olympic, right, they'd be going to the Olympico with absolutely no motivation to win, no reason to win. They would probably play a second-rate team. That was what I was hoping for, but now that isn't going to be the case. Unless Napoli lose these next two fixtures, I just don't see Juve not coming to the Olimpico and going full strength now. Again, had they not lost against Napoli, we're probably looking at a much different scenario. So I do like Roma's chances. I really do. Obviously, this weekend with Juve playing Inter, it's a huge opportunity for Roma to sort of increase that lead from 1 point to 4 points. Now, granted, that's assuming they win against Chievo. I mean, one of their worst performances all of the season came earlier in the year against Chievo.
Oh, I remember
and
that
were,
one, yeah.
Oh, they were absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible. So if they play like that, it's certainly not a given that they will take 3 points. But, you know, if they can play relatively well, Chievo, they're I won't say they're comfortably above the relegation zone, but they're far enough from the others to where that maybe they're packing it at this point too. I don't want to assume anything, but the Roma should undoubtedly win. But again, if they play the way they did against them earlier in the season, it's far from a given.
Interesting. So let me ask you quick hits on these two other. One of them is definitely a positive. So this week in the match against Liverpool, we saw the debut of Qatar Airlines as a Roma sponsor, which, you know, Roma hasn't had a sponsor in a while. Maybe you can tell us how long it's been. But give me a little bit of details to our listeners on the sponsorship deal and what it means to Roma. I think it's great that they kind of jammed it in. They took advantage of a Champions League semifinal to get a lot of exposure. But tell our listeners a little bit what Roma can get out of this.
Sure. I mean, I think it's really, really important. The last time Roma had a sponsor on their shirt was the 2012-2013 season. So it's been a number of years that they've gone without a sponsor. I know for a fact, just from people I've talked to at the club, they've been in talks to have a sponsor for almost 2 years now. They've had offers in the past, but they were far below what they were asking.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to accept an offer just to accept an offer. And you sort of dilute the value of the brand, when you take an offer far below than what you're asking. So, I can understand them going a number of years without having a sponsor, just not having the right offer. So for them to this deal is worth right around 40 million euros. That's excluding bonuses. It's for 3 years. It's the third highest deal in Serie A. It's behind Juve and Sassuolo. But Sassuolo's is a little different just because the sponsorship. The team sponsoring the shirts, David, as you know, it's owned by
the
president.
Yeah,
the
same president.
Right. So it's sort of a self-financed sponsorship. But nonetheless, it's really important, especially for a club. Again, you mentioned it earlier. They're in the crosshairs of financial fair play. Getting this revenue is just so crucial for a club like Roma. So I think it's extremely positive that they did it. A lot of fans have been waiting as to when they would do it. Now you also have a handful of fans who are a little upset just because the corporate side of football is sort of taking over. You're not going to have the plain or the blank shirts anymore, which, you know, I can sympathize with them. But I don't see any Champions League or league winning sides without a sponsor. So I'm very pleased with the new sponsor. I think it's extremely positive.
Okay, so the next thing Roma could, of course, do to improve their situation even more is with the stadium. People who know about Italian bureaucracy know that it's never straightforward or easy. There were some positive signs not that long ago, but tell us where the situation is with the stadium, where we're at as we stand now.
Sure. So it is still very, very much stuck in the bureaucracy stage. Palotta gave an interview, I want to say, a week and a half ago, and he said the construction, he is aiming to have it start towards the end of the year. I mean, when this initially started, the initial opening date was 2019-2020. That's not going to happen now. We're at least 3 years out, in my opinion. The problem that they're running into is they have most of the approvals that they need, but there are different, I won't call them government bodies of the government, but just, for example, there's a consumer protection agency. They're called Codecons, and they keep filing these complaints against the stadium being built, and each time that happens, the club has to deal with it. It's got to go through the proper channels to get approved or rejected. You know, so far, any body that has submitted or filed a complaint, nearly all of them have been rejected. So I think we're going to see a breakthrough here within the next month or two. And then I finally think that we will start seeing construction. Conservatively, I'll say 4 to 6 months.
But you're pretty positive that this is actually going to happen, right?
It's going to happen. Palotta has given far too much money to the city. Palotta has just given far too much of his time. He already has the financing secured. And listen, the mayor of Rome, Virginia Raggi, she said that this stadium is far too important to fail. And it's going to be more than a stadium. I mean, this isn't just a football venture. I mean, this is an entire building up of the city venture. So I think just the city, the club, they have far too much invested to let it fall by the wayside. So I absolutely think it'll happen 100%.
Interesting. Okay. So I know you got to go. Your Cleveland Browns are almost on the clock for the draft. So let me ask you very quickly two things. How surprised are you of how great Salah has been at Liverpool? It must have hurt in a way what he did. On the other hand, probably you felt vindicated saying how great he was. And lastly, you're kind of objective because you don't really have a horse in the race. Who do you think is going to win the Scudetto between Juve and Napoli?
Oh, I think Juve will eventually win it, honestly. That side is just far too, they're far too tested, in my opinion, to let it fall by the wayside. As a Roma fan, selfishly, I'm waiting for this run of theirs to end because I feel like the Roma have had one of the best stretches in their club history, but they've just faced this indomitable Juve. And it's just been, you know, you just got to tip your hat to them just because for as good as Roma, Napoli have been, Juve have just been better for the longer stretch. So I think they're going to win, and it's absolutely deserved because they proved that they can fight on all three fronts, and they would undoubtedly deserve it. I think they're still the best side in Italy. Now, as for Salah, I mean, I remember talking with you when he moved there. I thought he was going to do well regardless. I I think I predicted 15 to 20 goals.
You get that by December, yeah.
Right. So I'm not shocked that he's been doing well in the Premier League. I initially thought he would need some time to adapt. Now, I don't think anybody predicted, you know, the number of goals that he would bag. But, I mean, anybody who watched him in Serie A, I mean, he was just a complete attacker. He's got the pace. He's got the technical ability. I mean, really, my only knock on Salah was his weak foot is not very good. And I thought the physicality of the Premier League would be an issue for him. But he's shown that ladder concern is no issue at all. So I'm pleasantly surprised at how good he's been. But, I mean, again, anybody who watched him at Roma just knows that he was a very, very strong player. And you can just see Roma right now, what they're missing when he's not there. It's almost like a completely different team. They have one of the worst attacks in the top five, not even the top five, probably six or seven of Serie A. So he's a fantastic player. It really stings to watch him purge Roma in the manner that he did, but he's been purging everybody this season, and he's just a fantastic player. So,
and a great guy who really deserves all the success.
Absolutely. It's probably the old, you know, I'm probably showing my age a little bit, but you know, when you see a guy who just purges your club and he just holds his hands up, not willing to celebrate, I mean, I love stuff like that. I mean, what a gentleman.
Awesome. Well, you are such a gentleman for coming on as often. You decided to come on the podcast the week that my Padova got promoted, so I got to give you respect. You as a Vicentino, that couldn't have been easy. So, John, thank you so much for joining us as always. It's always such a pleasure to chat with you.
Absolutely. Always love talking. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care. Ciao.